God will take obedience over anything. He will take your obedience, and He can do anything in the world with that. Your talent, your skill, your goodness, your intelligence, your good looks, whatever it is you bring to the table is second rate to your obedience to God. Because He can fill any other gap that there is out there, but it is very hard for Him to fill the gap of obedience, because that is your part. That is on you, whether you're going to be obedient or not. So, what is a great man? When you think of great men and great people, great women, what makes someone great? Is it the impact that they have on society? Is it that they're remembered through the ages of time? Is it that they somehow amassed some great revenue stream and somehow became rich or created wealth for the nation or for a country? What is it that makes someone great? I was thinking about the people that have impacted my life the most, and the great men or great women in my life, and very few of them ever showed up in a newspaper. Never showed up on a newsstand, never showed up on TV. They definitely won't make the history books. But there's some great people in my life that have impacted my life. And I'm sure you guys, people are coming to your mind most likely right now, folks that have impacted your world that you would consider great. But there's also others that have made the history books that are great men. Now, Moses was one of those men. He was revered through the text of the Bible as a great man. So I want to look just a little bit at his life. Exodus 2, verse 1, it says, "And there went a man of the house of Levi and took a wife, a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him for 3 months." Now, everyone knows why she hid him, right? They were killing all the firstborn, all the sons. And when she could no longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch and put the child therein, and she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And the sister, his sister, stood afar off to wit what would be done to him. And the daughter of the Pharaoh came down to wash herself in the river, and her maidens walked along the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." So she had somebody that Moses had somebody that cared about him. It was his sister, and she had a good thought and put him in front of Pharaoh's daughter. Now, it's amazing to me that in a time when the babies were being killed, Moses would be saved. You know, there are going to be times in your life when everybody is falling out around you and you are going to be saved. I think of sometimes at work situation last year. We had a gentleman in the middle of a bunch of layoffs. He came to my office almost in tears, and he says, "I just got promoted." In the middle of layoffs, he gets promoted. And you think, well, God, why would God do that? I don't know. That's God's business, right? But God can and does do those things for us. It says on verse 7, "Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, 'Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?' And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, 'Go.' And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, 'Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages.' And the woman took the child and nursed it. And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses, and she said, 'Because I drew him out of the water.'" So Moses started life at a great disadvantage. He was set to be killed, but then it turns out he gets to be Pharaoh's son, Pharaoh's daughter's son. So he was set to be in great royalty. So I guess I would say that Moses was chosen. Moses was chosen. Now, I'm not in line with all the hyper-Calvinists, and don't get confused, but there are some things that God chooses on our behalf and some things that God chooses for us. There is sovereignty with God, and my logical mind takes me real strong toward His sovereignty and the fact that He has a purpose that He will fulfill. And, you know, you've got a part in that purpose. You've got a part in that purpose, and God has direction and purpose for your life, and He can start you out very early on that journey. I was thinking this morning about when I got saved, as Brother David was talking about the words of Amazing Grace. It took me back to that day, and that's been almost 30 years now. 30 years I've been able to live in my life, and I'm just 40, but 30 years I've been able to live with God's Holy Spirit speaking to me. How can you make it without some direction, some whispering in your life? How do people do it? How do people get through and not make mistakes, not make the big mistakes, you know, the ones that really matter? How do you do that without God whispering in your ear, telling you that you're doing wrong or that you need to straighten up or that you need to make this choice or that choice? And that's a lot about what this lesson is about today. Because even though Moses was chosen, Moses had some choices also in his life. So Moses made a choice. He started out with a great disadvantage, but he came privileged, and God can do that. So go down to verse 11. Let's go a little further into Moses' life. And it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out to his brethren and looked on their burdens and spied an Egyptian smiting an Hebrew. Now, the Hebrew was one of Moses' blood brothers, and the Egyptians was the family that he was adopted into, right? Pharaoh's daughter. So Moses knew who he was, and he looked this way and that way, and when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Now, Moses was protecting his own, and he was fighting against Pharaoh at this point. But don't ever be confused when you try to hide something in the sand. The sand's never deep enough to hide what you've done. So he tried to hide it in the sand, and he went out the second day, and behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together and said unto him that he did the wrong. Wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, Who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian? And at this point Moses said, Uh-oh, I've been called. And Moses feared and said, Surely this thing is known. Now when the Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled in the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian and sat down by the well. So Moses made his choice whether he was going to be on Pharaoh's side or Israel's side. He made his choice at that very moment. And those choices are hard choices, aren't they? Because Pharaoh had all the riches. He had all the power. And Moses was in line to just sit in that luxury for the rest of his life. And he could have taken a life of ease. But Moses, he chose God's people over the world. He chose what's right. He chose it over wealth. And he chose principle over position. There's great power in position, and that's an intoxicating thing, that power of position. But Moses chose principle. Moses chose hard over easy. The president of our company, he before he became our president, years ago, he gave a speech to a small group of us, and he was trying to talk about how he had succeeded in his career, and, you know, whatever, but these were his words. He said, I've always tend to run toward the hard stuff instead of running away from the hard stuff and trying to make my job easy. He said, if you run toward the hard stuff, for one thing, you'll stand out and people will notice that you're willing to take on the hard things. But the other thing, you'll get the recognition of solving the hard problems. So just throwing that in there. But he chose the hard over the easy. And, you know, we're talking about great men here and what made Moses a great man. He could have probably sat back as one of Pharaoh's inner circle and never made a name for himself. But in this case, he chose God. And Jesus said over in Luke 15, he said, And he said unto them, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. So we ought to be willing to give up the things that we can touch and hold for the things that God would have us to do. Another verse along those lines, Psalms 84:10 says, For a day in thy courts is better than a thousand. I had rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the tents of the wicked. Now, don't we make those decisions every day? Don't we have to decide God's way or the devil's way? You know, when I teach the young kids, it seems like a lot of times my lessons come down to, you know, all through your life you're going to have choices. And it's very simple, right? The choices are not always simple, but the philosophy is always simple. You're always presented with God's way or man's way, God's way or my way, God's way or Satan's way. And God's way leads to prosperity, some form of prosperity, because all God can do is make you better, even if He has to make you sick to make you better. All He can do is make you better because He loves you. And all Satan can do, because he hates you, is tear you down. He may make you better to tear you down. He may make you rich to tear you down. He may make you prosperous to tear you down. But all he can do is tear you apart. It's very simple. But the choices are not simple. I don't want to degrade the choices that we have to make. So we all get to make those choices. So promotion, power, position, and security may be offered. It may look like a big deal. It may look like something that it's a no-brainer for you to take and no-brainer for you to do. But if God says no, what are we to do? We're to say no. We have to trust that God's unknown is better than the apparent known. You've always heard the expression, a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. Not if God's telling you there's two in the bush. You got to be able to trust God. And having the Spirit talking to you and listening to the Lord will fix your heart on those things. So fix your heart on God's way and trust that He can. A lot of times we stumble over the fact whether God can or not. I never stumble over whether He can. I've already, like I said, I'm 30 years saved here. I've already seen what God can do. I still get stuck sometimes on whether God will, though. And that's His business, whether He will or not. And I don't ever know whether He for sure will. But I know He can. And that's the first step. It's amazing what God can work through your faith. So everyone knows the story of Moses' life. He had to make that hard choice to choose Israel so that God could use him to free the children of Israel, to get God's people out of Israel, out of Egypt. You know, your decision, your faith could benefit a whole town, a whole company, a whole nation, a whole bunch of people. God wants to use you to fulfill His purpose, and you choose another direction, that purpose gets waylaid, gets delayed. God can and sometimes will go fulfill that purpose through another person, but you'll never get the fullness of God if you don't surrender and do what you're supposed to do, because God can make big things happen through you if you're faithful. So Moses' faith affected a whole nation because Moses chose God. And he was available for God. If you will, well, you can turn to Exodus 3, verse 1. So Moses was, his purpose, his initial purpose was to take on Pharaoh and get the children of Israel out of Egypt. It says, "Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush was not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. Whenever God calls, the correct answer always is what? Here am I. And he said, draw not nigh hither. Put off thy shoes from thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God, a natural reaction in the holiness of God. Verse 7, and the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. If you think God doesn't hear your cries and doesn't know your sorrows, you're wrong. God hears it all. In verse 8, he says, and I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the hand unto a good land and a large, and unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said unto God, what he said is, he said, who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh, that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? Now, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but as soon as I read this verse and put it in my lesson here, I realized that there's been a theme going through my Sunday school lessons here recently. You know, every time God approaches someone that he wants to use, you know, it was Saul a couple of weeks ago. When God approached him, the first answer was, well, who am I? I don't measure up to this task. You know, God can never use you if he gives you a task that you think you're fit for. If you think you've got everything you need, then you've just stood yourself in a position where you're able, you're capable, and you don't have the humility necessary for God to fulfill what he has. So Moses had a right heart right here. He was a humble man. He didn't have the ability to do what he was being asked, to take on the Pharaoh of Egypt. Now, the power of the Pharaoh was basically, he was considered almost deity by the people. I mean, this was total, almost blasphemy to take on. I mean, this, you know, the culture that they grew up in, he was someone that, he wasn't just a man. He was powerful. He had all the riches. I mean, look at the, I don't know how many of you guys have been to Egypt. I haven't. Has anybody been to Egypt and seen the pyramids and all the tombs and stuff that were built? None of us? Well, I wouldn't go today either. Unless you got a bulletproof vest. But the things that the people built on their behalf and their honor just speaks to the importance that the Pharaoh would have had, or the view that the people would have had. So Moses was being asked to take on a power that was just unsurmountable. And he said, I have no ability. In chapters 3 and 4, if you read it closely, Moses goes on to say, I have no ability, I have no message, I have no authority, I have no eloquence, I can't even speak, I can't even get my words together. And you want to ask me to take on this man that's had all this training? He said, you know, I have no inclination, I don't even want to. But he trusted God, and he did. And that's why I said earlier that obedience can be used over any talent, over any skill, over any confidence. Obedience, God can use. And, you know, Moses did as he was asked. And I won't get into the details of how he got the children out of Israel. But, you know, God really fulfilled that. And he got all the children of Israel to follow Moses. And Moses now was a man of great responsibility. He was a man that had a whole nation following him to the promised land. And you know, Moses was put into the position of someone that you could say, to whom much is given, much is required. And the nation that was following him, every time Moses, every time they got uncomfortable, or you know, they weren't quite getting where they needed to be, they were complaining to Moses. And Moses had the burden of all these people and caring for all these people on his shoulders. You know, and Moses was held to a great standard. He was the man of God. And he was to be the leader that God expected for those people. But as you guys know, Moses made a mistake. You know, Moses was to never see the promised land because of what? One mistake, right? You guys know the story. For the sake of time, I'll break it down. God told him to go up and to speak to the rock, and that water would flow, and all the people would know that God had provided them water. That God had provided them water. Instead, Moses, in his anger, struck the rock and said, water come forth, and the water did, but it looked like Moses had provided the water. That's where it always breaks down, when the man that's being blessed starts thinking he's got something to do with his blessings. That's where it's going to break down in our lives. God may choose you in the beginning. You may have started out rough. You may have started out hard. God may have chosen you to separate you The very fact that you're sitting right here this morning says that you've been chosen to a degree and you've been separated and you've been blessed. Because the people that you were hanging around or the people that you know or the people that you had class with or went to school with, all of them aren't sitting here. All of them aren't in this good situation that you're in. All of them aren't trying to be in church. I mean, a lot of these faces here, I see you here on Wednesday night. I see you here on Sunday night. You're very devoted. You're very committed to God's ways. And you didn't do that on your own. God took you through a path that got you that committed. And not everybody has that benefit. So you were chosen. And, you know, and God would never have you forget that He's in charge and it's His glory that's got you where you are in your life. And Moses, he made that mistake of anger. Just like Saul, a couple of weeks ago, made the mistake of not waiting on Samuel to do his sacrifice. He said, well, I'll do the burnt offering. I'll do the sacrifice. He went from a man that had God's favor, that was to lead the nation forever, his kingdom could have run forever, to a man that God couldn't even look on, a man that God couldn't support, because he took the place that God had put him in, and he said, I'll take more. I'll take more. And God doesn't want you to have more. He wants you to have what He wants you to have. And we got to be very sensitive to the things that God has prescribed for us, and to never reach out and to get out of our place and to reach for more, especially when it comes to position. You don't take away from God's position. You don't try to confuse people that God's not doing the blessing and it's you, that you're the provider. And that's what Moses did here. He confused the fact that God was the supply and that God was going to take care of their needs. So it appears that Moses had gotten fed up with the 40 years of consistent bickering and lack of respect of the Israelites, and he overstepped his bounds. Instead of saying, God, bring forth the water, he said, must we bring you water out of this rock? So basically Moses took the credit for something God could do. And thus he lost the opportunity to lead the people into the promised land. Now Moses only got to see the promised land from a hilltop. He didn't get to go in. And that's unfortunate. So we'll never get the fullness of God unless we're sensitive to God's word. And it's amazing to me that Moses, after all he did and all he tried to do, after the one mistake, that he didn't get to go in. And Saul, after the one mistake, he was basically, and he had more mistakes after that, but after the one mistake, God wasn't able to support him. But it's all about that key thing of where you believe you belong in the hierarchy with God. So in God's will, God can make you great, and you can have a great impact, and you can love what you do, and you can love people, but you got to stay in God's will. So don't deprive yourself of the fullness of God that He has for you. Don't choose what looks good to you instead of what looks good to God. You know, I'm convinced that God makes really big moves around some of His people. And y'all might think I'm crazy about this, but I think God counts on the obedience of His people to do really big things around those people. I've kind of seen it play out in my life. If Brother Ken hadn't been obedient, what? I don't know. What would this church look like? Would this church exist? Would there still be a chicken house and a little lake and a little burnt down house on this property? I don't know. I don't want to give Brother Ken too much credit for this, but God used his obedience to do this. God used Brother Mike's obedience to do this. It was more than just Brother Ken. But God did this through human beings' obedience. Could have done it without them. Don't know if he would have or not. You know, we talked earlier about what God can do and what God will do. But the minute we get arrogant, the minute this church gets arrogant, the minute we start thinking that we're somehow better than those around us, because it wasn't very long ago that we were those around us, God will empty this place, and it'll be no good to anybody. The minute you start getting arrogant in your life, God will flush your life, and you'll be no good to anybody. So even though Moses didn't enter the promised land, his obedience made him a great man in our history. And God accomplished great things through his obedience. You know, they were calling Jesus out with Moses, right? They were saying, you know, what are you in relation to Moses? What are you in relation to the law? And, of course, Jesus said, well, Moses brought you the law, but I bring you grace. In Hebrews 11, verse 24, it says, by faith Moses, this is the way he's looked back upon. This is the New Testament. This is the way we look back at Moses. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. So that's what the history books initially describe him as. That was when he made his choice that I'm going to choose God's way and not this other way. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasure of sin for a season. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured seeing him who is invisible. Think about that verse. Instead of taking what he had right there in front of him to be royalty and to live in a life of luxury, he chose that thing that's invisible, that spiritual thing. We can do that too. You know, nothing's changed in the spiritual world. I mean, we've got iPads, we've got laptops, we've got Wi-Fi, we've got satellite, we've got all these things. But those are just peripheral to the carnal world versus the spiritual world. Those things have been around forever, and our choices are no different than the choices back then. We get to choose God's way or the world's way. So we should be choosing the things that are invisible, the things that are made up of faith, the things that are made up of God. And we got to trust that God will honor that obedience and that He'll use our obedience to fulfill His work. So in conclusion, one of the writers said, if Moses had not refused the offers of the world by faith, we wouldn't be here talking about him today. He'd be a mummy in King Tut's tomb in Egypt, and we would be saying, Moses who? So it's the choice that he made to follow God's way that put him in the history books, and not just another mummy, another one of Pharaoh's court, lined up in a tomb somewhere that some archaeologists just could find. He was a great man of God. So thinking of the great men, whenever you think of great men, think about the obedience that's required to be a great man in God's faith. Thank you.